everyone. Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan Budd here, and we have an awesome episode for you today. I have Jason Neuswanger on the other line, and he is a Rockslide member. And Jason, I saw you had a thread up on hunting Idaho for the first time, transitioning kind of from hunting like Alaska caribou to hunting Idaho mule deer, and you talk through the whole trip and a little bit of how you planned it. I want to dive into a little bit more of that on this podcast, but thanks for taking some time to hop on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'll be happy to talk about my experience not getting mule deer and what I learned so I can hopefully have a different experience this year.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what a lot of why I wanted to have you on is because, you know, in the end result, I guess, of last year's mule deer hunt is you didn't get one, but you had a lot of experiences and there was some things that happened too, like you had a plan and then that plan wasn't really panning out. So you had to adjust within the trip. But I think the important part of that is you did adjust and just try to go a different way. You didn't just, I guess, kind of give up when your original plan wasn't working. So that's what I wanted to cover on this podcast. But can you just give people a brief introduction on yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a fish ecologist, actually. I study trout and salmon behavior and population dynamics. And I went to school for that up in Alaska and was there for grad school and a postdoc studying feeding behavior of trout and salmon. I grew up hunting whitetail in the Midwest, but then I got really into mountain hunting for caribou up in Alaska and then kind of wanted to transition into doll sheep eventually. I finally got in, you know, felt like I got my skill level up to where I got one sheep hunt in right before work ended up taking me out of Alaska. And then as a non-resident, you can't go back and hunt doll sheep without paying, you know, $12,000 to $15,000 for a guide. So I got to try that once and didn't get one, but got really into mountain hunting, just kind of dreaming about that. And when I got down to Washington in 2017, I started thinking about mule deer as kind of my replacement for my annual caribou hunt that was typically pretty successful. And so far, they've proven elusive. I tried a couple of times in Washington, not really the high alpine stuff from the Cascades that people do to get way back into the backcountry, but looking for some of the lower open sagebrush type country or just rolling foothills and kind of having trouble getting away from people and pressure, and decided to give Idaho a try because there's just a lot more of that kind of country. And it is, and you know, proved to be quite a bit easier to get away from people in that kind of country than it is here in Washington. So really enjoyed the Idaho experience and learned a lot from it. And like you said, I went into it with a few kind of well-defined plans, thinking, all right, backpack hunt. I kind of planned out my routes on Google Earth. You know, I went through all the unit statistics and all the other things that people typically talk about doing e-scouting, but I was just kind of planning in the context of a backpack hunt. You know, here's a loop that I can make over, you know, 4 or 5 days through all these different drainages and glass everything and really see some good country. And I had, you know, plan A, B, and C were along those lines. And I started out with plan A, hiked up this drainage that doesn't have, well, it's in an old burn and it's got an old trail through it. It's got a bunch of fallen logs across it. It's not on a map. So it's the kind of place that not a lot of guys are going to go. And I successfully got away from people for opening weekend in a pretty crowded unit by doing that. But turns out I also got away from deer for the most part. You know, I hiked in, got set up for opening morning, spent a night on the top of a mountain in 0 degree weather in a 3-season tent that wasn't a whole lot of fun. Glassing at first light, saw 2 deer all morning, I think. Couldn't tell if they were bucks or does because they were too far away and I only saw them for a brief time. But they just weren't really using this burn or this area that I was in very much. And that made me really rethink the whole committing to a backpack hunt for an area that I didn't know very well. because I didn't want to, you know, put that much into it without having talked to some people who know the area better, talked to the biologist about, you know, making sure I'm in an area with a good number of deer. So, you know, suddenly that threw plans B and C kind of into chaos too, because I didn't know if those were going to be any good or if, again, I was going to be committing to a place that didn't have any deer. So that kind of changed my whole plan for the trip to go back to one of the towns and get on some Wi-Fi in the evening and start kind of redoing my e-scouting, which is definitely not how you want to spend a good chunk of your season or really any chunk of your actual hunting season. You know, I wanted to be out in the woods the whole time, and I ended up sitting in a restaurant on Wi-Fi trying to figure out plan D, E, F, and so on, which I didn't really go into it with. So I think it was a good decision to not continue with my, you know, long kind of committed backpack hunt plans without knowing enough about the area and to go into this sort of scouting mode. But at the same time, I regret that it was necessary in the first place, because I should have had, you know, should have done better research with, you know, people with kind of on the ground, boots on the ground knowledge of the area. And I should have had more than just three plans going in. I should have had a backup for those kind of shorter scouting type trips, I think, you know, going into an area for the first time.
Yeah. So in that article, you talked about you saw a whole bunch of elk though. And you, after talking to a couple people, you figured out that you were kind of deer hunting in an elk spot. And that's really interesting, because we just went and scouted an area that we saw a ton of elk up high and there was no deer. And that's kind of what I found out there. And that trip, we hadn't backpacked in very far, but it was still a commitment that by the time I said, hey, we need to leave, I didn't have enough time to go back, pack up camp, get back to the vehicle, move areas, and then be able to glass that evening. So then there we're tied in for another evening, and then with some logistical stuff, because we got those stupid little goats, it would have blocked our next morning off too. So we couldn't just hike out at night. So it was interesting. So I thought that was an interesting thing that you ran across.
Yeah, and that was sort of something I hadn't learned about Idaho until this trip. There are just, you know, places within that general region that has a lot of deer. There are, I don't know, specific drainages, or I don't think it's units, because there are plenty of deer killed in this unit, but I think there are specific drainages or specific parts of the unit that just have really high elk numbers and really low deer numbers. And, you know, looking at the habitat on Google Earth, at least to my eye, I don't understand why there are very few deer and a lot more elk. I was actually talking yesterday to a biologist for this area, who was, you know, kind enough to take some time to run through some ideas with me. And he said, yeah, there's some of the other areas I was thinking about hunting this year actually have, you know, pretty depressed deer numbers right now, and really high, like over objective elk numbers. It's in an area that I think is a draw for elk. He thinks, I really wish I'd gotten into this with him a little bit more, what the reasons were for it, but he was thinking that actually the high elk numbers were contributing in some way to the lower deer numbers. And I think it'd be interesting to hear why that was the case. And I regret that I didn't follow up with that question.
Yeah, that is really interesting. And actually, ironically enough, we just had Sydney Lamb on, and she's a biologist in Northwest Utah. But we were talking about trying to get some other biologists on and talk about some of those same things, like why you find a large number of elk in certain places that look like really good deer habitat, but you don't find deer, and then how those two animals cohabitate. I guess that's the word, together. I think we're going to be diving into that more in the coming, hopefully just this summer, we'll be able to dive into that a little bit more. Cause that's all knowledge that you can apply directly. Like when you're in the field, you can apply that and know when to pull the cord or not.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it seemed to me when I was on the field, and, you know, this is my impression as a very new mule deer hunter, but it seemed like I was seeing more elk up kind of on the grassy tops of the mountains around where I was. And the deer, when I found them, were down a little bit lower where it was more sagebrush and timber. I wasn't way up near the alpine basins and peaks. I know the mule deer bucks will, a lot of them, some are up there above tree line, but on kind of the lower foothill type mountains, the area where you get above tree line, I was seeing way more elk up near the tops and all the deer down a little bit lower. So that's kind of my guiding principle for looking at places for this year. I'd be really curious to hear some commentary on that from guys who've hunted mule deer a lot longer than I have and see if that was an accurate impression or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So rolling back to the trip, just a lot of people ask this kind of question is, how did you make that plan for your 2019 trip? Maybe even beyond picking the unit in the state, just, you know, the research and the scouting. You mentioned you use Onyx and Base Map. Did you use anything else? Like, I guess that's, yeah. Did you use anything else to plan that? And what did those routes look like? Were they really long, like 10-mile loops?
Yeah, I think I had 10 to 15-mile loops planned out that I ended up not using because I realized I was going into the wrong kind of country. But yeah, that's like the kind of loop that I've done before in Alaska. And well, sheep hunting was more like a 40-mile loop. The caribou typically has been, you know, that 10 to 20-mile range, sometimes with a pack raft to exit the unit and things like that. So, you know, that's the kind of distance that I'm really comfortable with for a hunt like this and getting an animal out by myself solo. I know I can make two trips if I have to, or just one with a heavy load. Yeah, really. And a lot of the previous or the earlier scouting was figuring out the units. You know, I go through and read what I can find on Rock Slide and other forums and try and get comments there. But mostly I was looking at the statistics that are available from Idaho Fish and Game. And, you know, just as a part of my job, I do a lot of heavily mathematical fishery science. So I'm really comfortable with the numbers. So I get into all those numbers and build spreadsheets and kind of compute some other things beyond what they've got there just to try and figure out like how many deer were being taken like per hunter, per unit area and things like that to compare units. And, you know, ultimately once I got a little bit more of a feel for them, I wasn't looking too closely at those anymore, but that kind of narrowed it down to some general areas. And then, within that context, I was really looking for places where I could, or I thought that I could get away from people, for the most part. And, you know, that's what everybody's trying to do, but, looking for mostly drainages that don't have trails on the map going into them, but still look promising for habitat. And then focusing on those kinds of places where you know, a lot of people are going to want to hike in on a trail for a while and maybe get just a little bit off of it. So I was really looking for places where either there's like a drainage I could go up with no trail, or I could like jump over a ridge from a road or trail into somewhere that's otherwise really hard to access. Just little barriers to put between me and most of the other hunters. And, you know, that worked out pretty well. I didn't get screwed up by other pressure too much until, you know, near the, like, one of the last couple of days of the hunt, I was off in a completely different area that you can't really get away from people like that. And I did get messed up a little bit by some other guys after messing up some other things myself. But, yeah, that was the main goal though was a combination of getting away from people and then looking for things that, you know, to my untrained eye looked on Google Earth like good mule deer habitat, kind of rocky bands for cover, you know, burns or green areas for feed, things like that.
Gotcha. When the backpacking loop plan and plans that you had went sideways, how did you adjust?
Yeah, so I basically, you know, decided pretty quickly after a really cold night in my three-season tent that, you know, only seeing two deer, it was not worth it to stay up there in an area that I didn't have, you know, confidence from previous scouting or anything was going to have some good bucks hidden away among the couple of deer per day that I might see. So I just backed out of there. Just was a little bit confused about what to do really for a while. I kind of figured, all right, I'll go back and get on Wi-Fi and start to think about what to do after dark. So I, you know, drove out of there. I actually spotted some more deer as I was driving out of that area, just from the road, kind of right at dusk, and gave chase up a little hill, and they just kept cresting around the edge of the ridge in front of me. So I just kind of followed disappearing mule deer butts until the end of shooting hours, and never really got to see what was on front, if there were antlers on any of them. So yeah, I just went into town, did a good bit more online research, tried to come up with something just quick and close for the next morning, which was to go up to a little alpine basin nearby and see what was going on. I did that that morning and just, you know, didn't see anything. I was the first person up in that basin because there was still some fresh snow. I could see there weren't any tracks going in on the trail, but didn't glass up any deer there. So kind of gave up on picking random small basins to go into, and just went back. Then, you know, the night of midday, I also spent a good chunk of time in a restaurant on Wi-Fi, coming up with some new plans, and then kind of got going on those. And I think maybe one other time I had to go back into town and then spend some more time looking things up. But yeah, it was really maybe, you know, two full middays or so that I ended up, you know, it was important to do, given where I was in that hunt, but it was also kind of a waste in that I should have had those plans ready to go before I even started the trip.
Gotcha. So you went to more of like the, would you say the lower country, and just tried to find more sagebrush type broken canyons, and you did more things out of your, not really out of your vehicle, but more like a base camp type setup.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never the type to just drive around looking for deer from the road, and you know, that's not my way of hunting at all. But I was trying to find places where I didn't have to commit too far, and it's sort of like almost scouting while hunting, I guess, because I didn't know any of these areas, and I wanted to cover a fair number of different types of areas until I started getting into deer. And yeah, I wasn't way down in the really low flat or just, you know, really low rolling type sagebrush stuff, but more in like the 7,000 to 8,000 foot range, like the foothills where you've still got a lot of sagebrush and some bitterbrush and things mixed in with some big patches of timber. And, you know, you're still about 1,000 feet below the high alpine. I actually also learned that I need to research the roads a little bit better in the areas, because I had, you know, I had formulated a whole bunch of plans. I learned my lesson by having too few plans. I had a whole bunch of little plans going into this adjustment, and the first one or two of them, I got to roads that turned out to just go through a private ranch or something, and you know, didn't look like it from the map or Onyx, but I couldn't go through some of those and get to the places I planned. So I got to, I don't know what it was, plan C or something of the new plans, and was actually up on good public land. And, you know, one of the glassing spots I got to was kind of nice. I just set up for the evening somewhere, could, you know, walk half an hour from the car to get to a glassing knob, and saw probably 20 deer or so that evening, mostly does and fawns, but spotted one little buck that I would have liked to get, just a little 3x3, I think probably a big yearling or something. But at this point, you know, with my plans falling apart, I wasn't about to be picky with an empty freezer. So I thought for a second about trying to get him before shooting light ended, but started down the hill and realized pretty quickly at the pace I was going that I wasn't going to make it within range by the time it got too dark, and decided to try and locate him again the next morning, which was one of the good decisions that I made, because I actually did find him from the same spot in the morning, higher up on the hill, and spent the better part of the day trying to chase that deer. I would have had to kind of drop down this canyon and then climb up another 1,000 feet or so to get to where he was, all like kind of on the ridge that he was on below him, where he would have a view of me. So I really couldn't just make a direct stalk, I think, from there. So I ended up going around, and again, my poor knowledge of roads hurt me a little bit, because it turned out that what I thought was a road to get around closer behind the mountain was actually a trail, and another, 20 minutes of walking that slowed me down. But I still spent a few hours after I thought that this deer had bedded, because I saw him disappear behind a tree, and I thought I saw everything behind the tree, and he never came out. So I thought, okay, he must have bedded there, because I was just watching that place like a hawk. And thought, all right, he's bedded over there somewhere. I've got some time probably before he gets up to feed again, and he's not moving too fast. So I'll go around and come up from above, from behind him, and ambush him that way. So I did this big loop and came up kind of the other side of the mountain and dropped down on that spot and just put on all the things I've listened to on deer hunting podcasts and everything else about being sneaky. Took my shoes off to be quiet, because I knew by the time I got a line of sight to him, I'd be within range where he could hear a footstep really easily. Put all of my meager mule deer stalking skills into sneaking up on this tree where that deer had been. And it turned out that he had never even bedded there in the first place. He had slipped away through some kind of swales in the terrain behind the tree that I hadn't been able to see from where I was. So he had just gone over the ridge 3 hours ago into who knows where, and I spent the whole time sneaking up on an empty tree. So that was definitely a lesson learned to, I think, not assume that a mule deer bedded somewhere unless I've got a really confident view of everywhere that he could have left through. And to be really careful that I'm sure about that view, or hopefully actually see him bedded and find him in that.
Yeah, for sure. So. I did that twice in Colorado, so don't feel bad.
Yeah. Good to know I'm not the only one.
No, yeah, you're definitely not the only one. So when you're talking about, the access points and the roads and things like that, does that come down to, like, I always try to preach go scouting because of that very exact reason, not really to go scouting just to find animals, but just access points and roads and ways you can go in and out and quickest ways to glassing points and things like that. So would you take a separate scouting trip just to figure out that information if you were going to go into a new area, or would you rather just go in a couple days before the hunt?
That's a good question. I would love to take a separate scouting trip if I had time. Time could be kind of hard to come by when it's a 12-hour drive to the area that I'm hunting.
Yeah.
So I don't get too much time to do that when I'm that far away, but I think, trying to find some people to talk to who know the area and can tell you about some of those access points is maybe a good place to start. Also, like you said, going in a couple of days before the season to scout some of those is a great idea. So, Yeah, that's definitely what I'm trying to do for this year. I'm actually going to do a fishing trip out toward Yellowstone and try and swing through the country. I'm going to deer hunt on the way to and from there and at least scope out my top few ideas for where to deer hunt this year. Make sure I understand all the access and know that there are deer in the area.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to stay? Are you going to stick in the same area?
I don't think so. I was sort of leaning that way, but the biologist that I talked to suggested that the population there is down more so than some of the others in the general region. So I'm starting to at least consider some plans that would be in some new country that I'll have time to scout on this fishing trip midsummer.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, is there any, I guess, major learning points you want to pass on to people? Any advice or anything like that?
I think one of the things that I struggled with the most on this trip, and maybe this is a perpetual struggle that I never quite got figured out, and maybe nobody ever gets it completely figured out, but I counted up the mistakes on all the bucks that I saw and didn't get, which I think is kind of it's a fun exercise to do after the hunt, is to go through and really write down what you did wrong, what you did right, and tabulate that and think about how you could do things differently next time. Three times I counted, I had assumed the deer moved away farther somewhere from where they were. And it turned out that they were actually closer to where I left them. The most frustrating of those was toward the end of the hunt in a completely different part of Idaho. Was a unit where you can only shoot two point. And I actually found a mature, nice sized 2 point, which I guess is about the best that you can do there during the general season. And was really excited about that after a morning of kind of goofing up on a smaller deer. And that was another lesson. I had marked the position of a deer that I spotted on my Onyx, and I marked the position wrong because it was kind of low rolling foothills, and I got in a little bit too much of a hurry, and I put it in the wrong spot, and I spent the morning stalking the wrong spot, and then ended up losing my chance at that deer. And scouted just kind of not expecting anything, but I got back to my glassing hill around noon and scouted around, and to my surprise actually found this bigger deer, went after it, and got into a perfect position for where the deer had been. If I had just sat there for the rest of the day, I would have killed this deer. It was bedded in some mahoganies, like 180 yards away. I had snuck up successfully, was in a great shooting position. Any way it came out of that patch of mahogany, I could have had it. But it had disappeared in the time that it took me to go up that hill and get into position. And it had bedded down in there, but I didn't know that. I thought maybe it had fed around the edge of the ridge. And so I went after where I thought maybe it had fed, and I tried to be as sneaky as possible, but I still ended up blowing it out. So that was kind of the main mistake that I made. Three times I assumed that deer had moved when they actually hadn't. Two times I assumed that they had bedded when they had actually moved. So I'm not sure how to balance that. No, you can't just do one or the other. It's kind of a situation-specific judgment. And, you know, I zigged when I should have zagged, yeah, and zagged when I should have zigged about five times on that specific judgment. And I've got to get better at figuring out which one of those two to do. I don't know if you've got any tips for that, because I'm sure you've hunted more than I have for these.
Oh yeah, it's pretty average. I went through that a lot last year. Just the same thing, like the deer would be up in this little basin type thing, and where they like to come out in the evening was right at the very bottom of it. So I would slide down to the bottom of it and try to wait for them to come down to me. And instead they would go up over the ridge and drop into the next one over. And then I would go around the next morning and get on the ridge for the next one over, and then they would drop right down into the bottom. So it's just it's a real pain. Some of it's just the country that, you know, you're hunting in and where they are and where they like to bed, because sometimes it's kind of just a shot in the dark. You know, some places where they bed, you can't see them. Like, you cannot see them from a glassing point. You just have to try to go in there. And I think my biggest downfall is I need to be more patient, because more times than not, I'll think that they've moved when they're still there. So it's really just a cat and mouse kind of learning experience.
It's good to know that's kind of a common struggle. And yeah, I think, you know, it was three times I should have been more patient, and two times that I got overly patient on thinking deer had bedded when they hadn't. So, yeah, I think I imagine it's just kind of a judgment call of reading the habitat and the behavior of the deer when you last spot them and trying to anticipate what they'll do next. That is just the sort of thing that comes with experience that I don't have yet.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It just takes time and experience. I'm lucky to where I get to stalk a lot here where I live in the Midwest. So when I go out west, I have a little bit of a jump start on that. But as we kind of start wrapping this deal up, what about gear wise? Was there anything gear wise that you brought or wish you would have brought or going to change for next year or anything like that?
I mean, I've got my backpacking gear pretty well dialed in from Alaska. I do put together a list of gear upgrades to make kind of throughout the hunt to, you know, little things break, like, you know, remember to have a field patch kit for my Therm-a-Rest. Because I had the last couple of nights, I had a little pinhole. And I've got one of those Neo Airs, so it's all air. There's no other padding in there. And when the air goes out, it's not so fun. Mm-hmm. So I had to stop and blow that up two or three times a night for the last couple of nights I was out backpacking. And, you know, so I'm going to remember to carry a field patch kit for that thing, which I definitely recommend to anyone else who's running with those. I think the big thing that I want to try and do for this year is try and improve my range with my rifle. I'm comfortable out to about 300 right now, and I'd like to be able to push that a little bit farther. I know that my rifle should be capable of that, so I'm going to try and find a place to practice at longer range and have a few little upgrades done to improve my accuracy, where I can shoot a tight group out at the distances where I was actually seeing deer and not have to put so much into stalking a lot closer necessarily. Although I still like to get as close as I can before a shot, but you know, sometimes you're on one side of a canyon and the deer's on the other, and it's you know, it's a long shot or nothing.
Yep, I totally get that. If there wasn't anything else, I guess we'll just wrap it up. I really appreciate you you hopping on. I think this is going to be a great podcast for people.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk through and rethink hunts and plan for next time to do things better. And yeah, I try and kind of, when I'm getting into something new, like I have with mule deer hunting, I always try and really look closely at everything I did wrong without getting too discouraged about it, so that I can learn every possible lesson I can take away from all the mistakes I've made and get through those mistakes as quickly as possible to start having some success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say that one thing that really stuck out to me about your article, and I get questions from guys and stories from guys later on about this, that they don't really put it out there for everybody to see, but privately they feel comfortable asking it or whatnot or telling me the story. But a lot of times when that first plan doesn't work out, you know, within the first couple of days, guys just ditch. They get overwhelmed and they don't know where to go or they don't know where to start. So it's just very indecisive, and then they end up just going home. And that's what I thought was really cool about yours, is you just got to like go in and take a breath and take a little break and, you know, dig out Onyx on your phone or whatever and just go try and find a place to somewhere else to go and yep. make it a fun hunt, even if you're not backpacking in like you thought you were going to.
Yeah. I think it is important. You know, I mean, you're out there in the season, you know, the deer are in the place that they're going to be during the next season and the next one. And, you know, there's no better time to scout and learn for next year than during the season. So, I think it's definitely a wasted opportunity if you just give up and go home after the first one or two or three or four failures, just to keep at it, just to learn, if nothing else, even if you don't get one, I think is really valuable. I did that the first couple of seasons when I was hunting Washington for mule deer too. And I think I learned a lot about the habitat that they prefer and the kinds of places I can hunt them. Just from doing that, even though it was, that didn't quite work out. I came really close. We've got a minimum 3-point rule here, so it's a little bit harder to find a legal buck. I had a lot of smaller bucks that I could have shot during those first couple of seasons. But yeah, I didn't really give up on those either until I tried several things. And, you know, eventually the last year I was doing it, I just realized the conditions were terrible. It was a really warm year, and I was up in a unit where you couldn't see very far because there was too much timber. And when you get into one of the open patches, you're crunching grass and there's no wind and it's all dry and you just can't move an inch without sounding like an elephant. And there was just no sneaking up on deer. You know, you had to have them patterned, I think, and know exactly where to find them and let them come to you. And I didn't have any of that kind of, you know, scouting or knowledge of where to be. So, you know, I kind of pulled the plug when I really ran out of things to try and knew that what I was doing just wasn't going to be the right path, but definitely tried everything that I could think of that might potentially work or change my luck.
Gotcha. How many days did you set aside for that Idaho hunt, and how many would you recommend to guys coming out? A lot of people want to cut it really short because they don't, it's a really hard thing to explain, but they do want to cut it really short. You know, they want to come out for 4 full days because they still want to save vacation time, which I can understand, but to really get the full experience, what do you plan for?
Boy, that's a tough one. It really depends on work on any given year. Last year, I was lucky to have a pretty big chunk of time. So I think I took about 9 days, and I didn't really have a set fixed amount of time when I had to be back. It was more just when I felt like I had exhausted most of my options. And, you know, ultimately the feeling to get a deer did kind of wear on me by the end of the 9 days. And I had those last couple of failed stalks or mistakes were kind of discouraging. And my wife was getting eager to have me back home helping out with things. So that was, you know, I kind of went by feel as to when it was time to call it. And I think I got about 9 days in before that happened.
Yeah, I think so. As much time as you can put into it. Because if you have more days, then you can feel a little bit better taking midday a couple of days, kind of like you did, to regroup and replan. Whereas if you're just going to try to shove like 4 days, you know, 4 full days of hunting in, and you decide to backpack in and then your plan goes upside down, I think that could be really stressful to try to figure out where to go next. Or maybe you wouldn't even pull the plan on that backpack hunt, you know?
Yep. I will say, I guess the one exception to this is I might try and hunt Washington this year too. And I've got a spot where I was seeing like, you know, 80 to 100 deer per day a couple of years ago. Just, you know, none of them were legal bucks, or only one of them was a tiny legal buck off in the distance. But that still struck me as a promising spot to be opening day. But, you know, I backed in and had a nice opening morning up there with just me and the deer. And then guys come in from all sides, because even though it's like one of the most remote areas of that kind of country, there just aren't very big patches of it. And people still get in there. So that wasn't really a place, I think, to be beyond the first morning or so. So, you know, I think some places you want to plan to be there before the pressure really sets in. And then that's a shorter hunt that you plan on. So I'm going to try and squeeze in a short Washington hunt if it'll fit with my longer Idaho trip this year.
Interesting. Awesome. So people can, I will link to the thread in the show notes. And then you have a longer version of this somewhere else written out, don't you?
Right. Yeah. So my Rock Slide username is Troutnut, and I run a fly fishing website called Troutnut.com. That's mostly about entomology and learning about the insects that we imitate It's got lots of close-up pictures of all the different insect species and kind of describes the hatching behavior and other things that you might want to know to fish when those bugs are hatching, and do well on trout. But I also post trip reports, and including my hunting trip reports on there. And there's a longer version of that rock slide post on my troutnut.com website. Right now it's just on the front page, but if anybody listens a lot later, it's under, there's like a trip report section in the articles section of the website where they can find it.
Awesome. And man, we might have to get you on again sometime to talk about fly fishing and some of that biology aspect of trout. That's super cool.
Oh yeah, certainly. I mean, my research, I kind of based my scientific career on my interest in fly fishing to the greatest extent that I could, and got into applying knowledge of trout and salmon, well, at least juvenile salmon feeding behavior, to understanding how they use their habitat and the capacity of the habitat, and how things like variation in stream flow affect the success of the population. So there's, you know, it's interesting stuff in its own right, just scientifically, but then there are quite a few lessons, I think, for anglers to take away from some of the things that we've learned about feeding behavior that I definitely enjoy talking about. So yeah, if you do fly fishing episodes, I'd be happy to get on for one of those.
Awesome. Yeah, you'd be first in line for it. But Jason, thanks again for taking some time to hop on, and hopefully we'll get you on again soon.
All right. Yeah, thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.